All rise. Wait. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Bruce Castle presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. You may be seated.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Chief Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Mormon. To my left is Judge Davis. We're here today in the matter of James L. Parrish. Has a docket number of 09757. Would counsel for the parties please note your appearance on the record?
Your Honor, Damian Wiedemeyer for appellant James Parrish.
Glenn Bergman, co-counsel.
Thank you.
Your Honor, my name is Lavinia Durr for the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, and with me as co-counsel is Deputy Assistant General Counsel Jesse Schuler.
Last name again?
Schuler.
Schuler, thank you. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, sir.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present argument. Counsel for the appellant, do you wish to reserve a portion of your time?
Yes, Your Honor. 10 minutes, please.
10 minutes. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Wiedemeyer, why do you believe 3.311 requires the Undersecretary to decide this issue?
The plain language of the delegation of authority within that regulation, Your Honor. The Secretary drafted this regulation, had the opportunity, had he, well, at the time the Administrator, but for convenience I'll refer to him as the Secretary. The Secretary had the option, had he chosen, to delegate the authority to any additional person, had he chosen, such as in the regulation for extra scheduler consideration at 3.321B1, but the Secretary chose to delegate the authority solely to the Undersecretary for Benefits.
So he could have chosen to delegate it to the Director of C&P?
Yes, Your Honor.
So where's the prejudice in having the Director of C&P decide this?
Well, the prejudice is in the fact that this compensation and pension director did not have legal authority to make this determination. It was an ultra-virus action. And this court has held as far back as In re Smith in One Vet App that an ultra-virus action must be treated as if it had never taken place.
Well, doesn't the Secretary have great latitude to interpret his own regulations?
The Secretary certainly has great latitude, yes, Your Honor. However, that latitude ends when the interpretation is facially inconsistent with the plain language of the regulation or facially incorrect under the Seminole Rock standard. And in this situation, the Secretary, as evinced by the regulatory history, made a specific decision to assign this function only to the Undersecretary for Benefits. And absent a affirmative subsequent delegation or an affirmative authorization to the Undersecretary to redelegate, the plain language of the regulation controls, and the specific delegation by the Secretary is the only authority that was delegated to act under this part of Section 3.311.
So it's your position that all actions that have been taken by the Director of C&P with regard to claims of this nature over the years have been the result of ultra-virus actions?
Yes, Your Honor.
And are all those then subject to being set aside?
If able to come before this court on judicial review within the court's jurisdiction, yes, Your Honor. It's seemingly axiomatic that inferior VA officials' ability to act is solely predicated on delegations of authority from the Secretary, either directly or through some form of redelegation.
So if the Secretary, let's assume for a minute that your interpretation is correct, and the Secretary simply neglects the Undersecretary, upon appointment of a new undersecretary through the political process, gets a new executive officer, and the new executive officer forgets to do a delegation of authority. then all subsequent actions by all of those people who had delegated authority or could have delegated authority, all of those actions are ultra vires.
If I understand Your Honor's question to go beyond the scope of 3.311 and addressing delegations of authority in general, then I would invite the court's attention to the VA directive that we filed as supplemental authority 2 days ago that lays out the Secretary's view on when delegation, the form in which delegations must be made, and when they will have effect.
Can I get something clarified? Is it your position that because the Secretary himself by regulation designated review by the Undersecretary for Benefits and consideration by the Undersecretary for Benefits, and that if he determines, et cetera, and it's constantly the Undersecretary for Benefits, that in this instance, the Undersecretary could not delegate because it is specifically required to be the Undersecretary by the regulation, and that this regulation, being more specific, trumps the general authority to delegate? Is that your position? I thought that was what you were saying at the beginning, but in questioning here, I'm not sure now.
My position is that absent a affirmative delegation of authority to the Undersecretary to redelegate the Section 3.
I'm still trying to figure out which one you are, and I'll, Judge Mormon, if you'll permit me, I would just like to say 3.100 is an authority delegated to the Undersecretary for Benefits to delegate to anyone within his jurisdiction, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And 2.6b is very similar to that. Is that correct?
Respectfully, I disagree.
Which one?
I disagree respectfully with both of your assertions.
You just agreed with the first one. You're taking it back? It's fine. I don't care. I just want to know where you are.
To the extent that my agreement was interpreted as agreeing that it is a delegation of authority in this specific situation, then I do not agree with that.
Well, I haven't gotten that far. Oh. It is a delegation of authority to delegate to anyone. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So both of them generally say the Undersecretary can delegate to basically anyone in his VBA.
If I may, Your Honor.
Now we have this C. 3.311C, and it specifically says the Undersecretary does these things. Is it your position that because the regulation says specifically that the Undersecretary does these things, that trumps the other general authority to delegate?
It trumps it, but not because Section 2.6B or Section 3.100 are delegations of authority that could provide the CNP director authority in this instance. The Section 2.6B does not permit the Undersecretary to delegate anything. It delegate authority specifically to anyone. It is a delegation of authority to the Undersecretary to act on that.
Well, excuse me. To authorize supervisory or adjudicated personnel within his or her jurisdiction to perform such functions as may be assigned. That's not a further delegation of authority. That's just assignment. Okay, fine. Then go to 3.100. Authority is delegated to the Undersecretary and the Supervisor and adjudicated personnel within, as designated by the Undersecretary, to make findings. Is that not an authority to further delegate?
One moment, please, Your Honor. With respect to Section 2.6B, the language Your Honor recited with respect to authorized personnel to perform such functions as may be assigned, that language parrots Section 512A. Section 512A refers to both assigning functions and duties and delegating authority. And so to interpret those two phrases to mean the same thing would render one of, or the other superfluous. So
okay, I wasn't going to argue with you whether it's right or wrong. I just wanted to know. Go to the other one.
Yes, sir.
3.100.
3.100 is a general delegation of authority by the Secretary to the Undersecretary and individuals within his jurisdiction he assigns to make findings and decisions as to entitlement of claimants to benefits. That is our position is that is a general delegation by the secretary, not by the undersecretary.
That's correct.
To individuals to decide claims, to make findings.
The question is, I still don't know where you stand. The secretary gave to the undersecretary the authority in 3.100. He didn't give it to the others. He gave it to the undersecretary.
And to the now, persons he assigns, yes, sir.
Yes. Now, can the undersecretary further delegate any authority given to him? Or is 3.311 in your position, C, more specific and limiting to the undersecretary for benefits himself?
3.311 is more specific and would trump 3.100.
He could not delegate at all given this regulation.
Given 3.100 as well.
That's my point. So your position is he could not delegate, even if he had a piece of paper that said, I delegate the authority to exercise my responsibilities under 3.311C, it'd be ultra vires. Is that your position?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.
Why?
Because the secretary, under the authority vested in him by Congress in Section 512A, may authorize successive redelegations. There is no provision, either 2.6B, 3.100A, that authorizes a redelegation. And looking at Section 2.6 in its entirety, the secretary uses the word redelegate in Section 2.6B and Section 2.6G. He expressly says that the individuals involved in those two subsections may redelegate. He does not use that language in Section 2.6B. There is no reference to redelegation in Section 2.6B. To invite the court's attention to a regulation that would reflect the authority to redelegate, I invite you to Section 21.410, which says, in pertinent part, the secretary delegates authority to the undersecretary for benefits, et cetera, et cetera. The undersecretary for benefits may further delegate this authority to supervisory and non-supervisory vocational rehabilitation and employment staff members. If language of that nature was in 2.6B or 3.100A, then it would be indisputable that the undersecretary would have the authority to redelegate any authority delegated to him by the secretary in those sections. 3.311, additionally, in addition to being more specific than either of these two sections, also contains no language regarding redelegation, contains no reference to the compensation and pension director. And the regulatory history of Section 3.311 confirms, or at least strongly suggests, that the secretary fully intended only the undersecretary for benefits to make this determination. The original promulgated regulation, the notice of proposed rulemaking for 3.311, initially had the chief medical director making the determination that the undersecretary currently makes. In response to comments from the public that would remove adjudicatory authority from the then Department of Veterans Benefits to the Department of Veterans Health, now the VHA, the secretary specifically amended the regulation stating, we don't want there to be any confusion about who has jurisdiction here. So he replaced chief medical director with chief benefits director, the current undersecretary. If the secretary had wanted this determination to be potentially made by anyone in the compensation and pension service or the Veterans Benefits Administration, we submit that he would not have specifically and solely identified the undersecretary when addressing the concern presented in the comments about a usurpation of jurisdiction by the now Veterans Health Administration.
Take a look at 3.115. Did the secretary bind himself to be the only one who could request the financial institution to provide this information?
May I have a moment to glance at this, Your Honor?
Certainly.
Thank you. I will confess unfamiliarity with this section, so my answer will be general in the sense that unless a previous provision in this part suggests that this authority has been delegated to an inferior official, then I would say yes, the secretary has limited it to himself. Absent a delegation of authority through a delegation memorandum, as are discussed in the VA directive that we filed the supplemental authority. Now, the public doesn't have easy access.
I just want to follow you. 3.321 you mentioned before under B?
Yes, Your Honor.
The Undersecretary for Benefits or the Director, Comp and Pen?
Yes, Your Honor.
So your position would be the Director, Comp and Pen cannot delegate that. Is your position also that the Undersecretary for Benefits could not delegate it to anyone else? It's just one of those two people?
Yes, Your Honor. For guidance on this matter, on this issue, I invite the Court's attention to Floyd v. Brown, specifically at page 96, where the Court analyzed this precise regulation and found that, in general, I'm summarizing, that because the Secretary had identified these two officials as the ones who could exercise this authority and had not identified the board, then that necessarily means that the board had not been delegated authority. And the same would apply to any other official who attempted to exercise the authority under this regulation.
How do you square that with this court's decision in Hilkert?
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe Hilkert addressed this particular issue specifically. It was not...
Factual context is exactly the same, isn't it?
The factual context in the sense that the determination in that case was made by the Comp and Pen director, yes, Your Honor. But as I noted in my reply brief, in a footnote and dissenting opinion made clear that the issue of whether the delegation was proper was expressly not raised by appellant's counsel in that case. So for the reasons articulated in the Harms case, the citation to which is in my reply brief, with accompanying authority, an issue that's neither raised before the court nor decided by the court in the opinion cannot be deemed to be controlling authority on that issue.
Is a footnote and a dissent controlling authority with regard to what was and was not covered in the majority decision?
Well, the majority decision references the Comp and Pen director only in a passing factual manner. It did not make an analysis of whether authority had been delegated to him to make that determination. It simply referenced that the determination, the opinion, had been rendered by the Comp and Pen director. I believe it also stated something to the effect of apparently acting as an agent of the undersecretary. So I would submit that for the reasons I just stated, that since it wasn't specifically argued, which the footnote establishes, and the issue regarding delegation wasn't specifically decided in that case, that it is not controlling in this manner.
What about in this supplemental filing that you gave us, this with regard to delegations of authority, there's a paragraph on purpose and policy, and then the policy sub A, it says VA officials will delegate decision-making authority to the maximum and legal extent that is both feasible and beneficial while ensuring proper accountability for all actions. And I won't read some of the other indications in what you've given the court that indicate to me that the purpose of this delegations directive was to tell VA employees, delegate to the lowest decision-making authority you possibly can every decision that is delegable, because that's a more efficient way to operate. And isn't that really what that directive is about? Rather than saying, and if you fail to do so in writing in a prescribed manner, then your action is going to be ultra vires.
We don't dispute that the secretary may wish his inferior officials to sub-delegate or delegate to the fullest extent possible. However, the directive also spells out the two methods by which such delegations may occur, at least from the secretary. And those are either by publication in the CFR or through a delegation memorandum. And this is in the Appendix A to the 1999 directive, Section 2. It makes clear that a delegation by the secretary must occur in one of those two ways. And in this case, obviously, there's no provision in the CFR that specifically delegates authority to the Comp and Pen Director to exercise the authority under 3.311. I cannot attest to whether there is a delegation memorandum because I do not have easy access to those documents. However, I will note that there in Section 2A, strike that, Section 2, above Subsection A, it makes clear that delegation memoranda will only be used to delegate internal management functions that are not defined by statute or federal regulation. And it would seem to be undisputed that the authority in this case is defined by a federal regulation, the Undersecretary's obligation to review the material under 3.311.
Mr. Wiedemeyer, yes, that's an interesting argument. And what does the language in 3.100 mean that does not say, well, it's under delegations of authority, but it says it's delegated to the undersecretary and the supervisory or adjudicative personnel within the jurisdiction of the Veterans Benefits Administration designated by the undersecretary to make findings and decisions? It doesn't say delegated to, designated by. Could there be another process where the undersecretary may have designated others to make decisions under 3.311?
I can't attest to whether there is an internal policy at VA that may purport to do that. I just simply don't know. But with respect to whether such a policy would be proper, I go back to my original position on 3.100A, which is that it does not provide redelegation authority to the undersecretary. It's a delegation by the secretary to, in addition to the undersecretary, to individuals designated by him to address findings and decisions regarding entitlement to benefits. So although the undersecretary plays a role in the sense that he identifies the inferior personnel to whom he wants this authority to apply, the only delegation that occurs here is from the secretary. It is not from the undersecretary to an inferior or authorizing the undersecretary to redelegate.
I understand, but if in fact this provision allows the undersecretary to designate, there's no need for a redelegation, is there?
Only if the designation...
Just a second. I just noticed the time is up. We'll add 2 minutes, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Only if the designation could be construed to include the 3.311 duty. I submit that it cannot.
Because?
Because 3.100A specifically references making findings and decisions as to entitlement of claimants to benefits. The task, the obligation of the undersecretary in 3.311 is not determining an entitlement to benefits. In fact, 3.311F makes clear that the entitlement determination will be through the usual standard adjudication procedures set out in Part 3. The undersecretary's role is not part of the adjudication of entitlement. It is to provide an advisory opinion on whether the disability in question may be related to radiation exposure. So for that reason, Your Honor, I would submit that 3.100A would not reach the general provisions of 3.100A would not reach to engulf the specific delegation to the undersecretary in 3.311.
Got it. Thank you.
And if we should agree with your position, does this court then go into an analysis with regard to whether or not the error made by the secretary and not, or the undersecretary and not delegating this authority was harmful?
Well, since I don't believe there has been a delegation by the undersecretary, there would be no prejudice by the undersecretary's non-action, if you will. With respect to whether there was prejudice to Mr. Parrish by virtue of the undersecretary not making the determination in this case, I simply submit that absent suit-staying power, no one can say whether the undersecretary, had he reviewed this case rather than the CMP director, would have reached a different outcome. It's impossible to know either way, and the veteran should not have to bear the burden of being
Your
a minor.
Your time is up. Would you like him to continue or come back? And
I think he's answered my question. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You left time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You may begin.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May it please the court. Again, my name is Lavinia Durr, and with me as co-counsel is Jeffrey Schuler, Deputy Assistant General Counsel.
Would you take a look at 3321B?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, so we have this process for exceptional cases. The Secretary writes his regulation, and he specifically designates two people, Undersecretary for Benefits, or, you correct me if I'm wrong, is the Director Compton Penn a subordinate to the Undersecretary for Benefits?
Yes, Your Honor.
So the Secretary specifically designated two people here to do it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why doesn't that indicate that the Secretary by regulation is saying, I want these people to do it, and it can't be further delegated by the Undersecretary?
Your Honor, I believe the designation, of the CNP director, as far as 3.311 cases go, falls under 38 CFR 3.100. That's where I understand in this section both the CNP director and the Undersecretary for Benefits were mentioned, but it's our position that the duties of the Undersecretary for Benefits has been designated to the CNP director. The CNP director is personnel within the Veterans Benefits Administration.
So 3.321B, could the undersecretary give this duty to determine an exceptional case to somebody else?
Your Honor, if he's personnel under 3.100, if it's personnel within the Veterans Benefits Administration.
So even though the secretary said it's USB or the director, the USB could designate anybody within his authority?
Yes, Your Honor. And the CNP director is a subordinate. It's a large organization, and the CNP director has the expertise in deciding benefits claims.
Could the CNP further delegate?
I think the CNP director would be considered a supervisory personnel, Your Honor, under 3.100, and he also can further delegate it.
Under what authority could he further delegate? Doesn't B limit his authority to further delegate? Under 3.100? I mean, is it your reading of 3.100 that the undersecretary can delegate to anybody he wants and anybody else can then delegate to anybody they want?
Your Honor, our position is that within the undersecretary for benefits is basically the head of the Veterans Benefits Administration. And within that, he can delegate the different personnel.
What does 3.100B mean? That's not a limitation of his delegation authority?
It is, Your Honor, to the 3.100A. I'm sorry, are you talking about 3.100A, Your Honor?
No, I'm talking about B now.
Okay.
I mean, it seems like if you take the interpretation you want for A, that the undersecretary can designate anybody he wants, delegate all authority that he has to anybody he wants, which
yes,
is what
Your
I'm
Honor.
Hearing you. What's B got to do here, then? Secretary says that the director, Compton Penn, can make certain determinations
as far
with
as
regard to forfeiting the right of gratuitous benefits. That can be delegated or designated, but A is broader. Why is B in here? That's what I'm just trying to figure out.
I think because it was a specific requirement for the forfeiture regulations. That it's a CNP director because it is a veterans claimant for benefits. Because there's other, in the Veterans Benefits Administration, there's other departments such as employment, insurance, other divisions that basically handle different types of claims. And as far as compensation and pension benefits, it's the CNP director that has the expertise in adjudicating those claims.
So, counsel, your position is that 3.100 is the delegation authority to the undersecretary?
Yes, Your Honor. It basically allows the undersecretary for benefits,
right,
delegating power from the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, as well as for him to designate other employees within the Veterans Benefits Administration.
And how does that happen as a normal practice? Are there letters? Or are we following the VA directive?
Your Honor,
delegations?
For this particular, for the 38 CFR 3.311, for the radiation cases, there is an M21-1 manual. The revised version is M21-1 MR Part 4, Subpart 2, Section C, Paragraph 11.
Give that to me one more time.
Sure. It's M21-1 MR Part 4, Subpart 2, Section C, Paragraph 11. And the older version of that, Your Honor, is M21-1 Part 3, Chapter 5, Paragraph 12G. And that manual revision, Your Honor, basically states that in radiation cases, it's the C&P department that basically gets involved. They are the ones to go get, who attempts to obtain the veteran's radiation doses. And if they have, once it's assigned as a radiation case, they process the claim. It's the C&P director on behalf of the Undersecretary for Benefits who decides if an outside medical opinion, as in this case, they got an opinion from the Chief Public Environmental Health Officer. And after that, upon reading that opinion, then they provide an opinion to the regional office as to whether or not...
Who publishes the M21?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Who publishes the M21?
The Veterans Benefits Administration,
it's
Your Honor.
It's the VBA.
Yes, and the head of the VBA is the Undersecretary for Benefits.
So if we were to find that the secretary, by regulation, delegated authority to the undersecretary specifically, and if we were to not find authority to further delegate, then this would be void also in your, well, I'll ask your opposing party. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, Your Honor. As I said, in that M21 revision, it's the C&P director that basically processes these kinds of claims. And under Ramey, these radiation cases were basically, these claimants were basically given an added benefit in terms of if their disease is listed as one of the radiogenic diseases. Unlike in this case, appellant's condition COPD and pulmonary fibrosis actually isn't one of the radiogenic diseases. But given Dr. Head's opinion, it was processed as a radiation case.
So, Ms. Durr, would you submit that the M21 is a designation or a delegation, or is it one or the other, or both?
Your Honor, I believe it's a designation under the delegation authority of 38 CFR 3.100. Okay. The Undersecretary of Benefits designated the C&P director to process these claims and to provide opinion on his or her behalf.
And what do you make of Mr. Wiedemeyer's argument that because of the specific language in 3.311, 3.100 does not control?
We simply disagree, Your Honor. As stated earlier, the C&P director is a subordinate of the Veterans, the Undersecretary for Benefits. The Undersecretary for Benefits, can designate power to particular departments within his control. He's basically the boss.
But Mr. Wiedemeyer's argument is that 3.100 deals with decisions regarding entitlement of claimants to benefits, and 3.311 addresses a different determination.
I believe, Your Honor, it is still on even radiogenic cases under 38 CFR 3.311 is basically still an entitlement for benefits. It's basically a process, or in this case it says on here, instructions as to entitlement of claimants to benefits. It's basically it's still treated as a service connection claim, except for he's given an extra process of being able to go for an opinion. Basically, the another benefit that they get for these radiation cases is that the veteran doesn't have to be the one to get his radiation dose. The C&P director is the one, and his department is the one to go get the radiation doses from the Defense Threat Reduction Agency.
You know, take a look at 512, 38 U.S.C. 512.
Yes, Your Honor.
Except as otherwise provided by law, the Secretary may assign functions and duties and delegate or authorize successive redelegation. So he's got broad authority to do that, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, now go to 2.6, regulation.
Yes, Your Honor.
Just A. The Undersecretary for Health is delegated authority to act on all matters. 2, to revise. 3, to designate the Deputy Undersecretary for Health or other physician of the Veterans Health Administration. An authority is hereby delegated, such designee. So we know the Secretary can designate or delegate authority. We know he can authorize redelegation. And we have in 2.6A a delegation of authority and an authority to designate, and then the Secretary's own delegation of authority, not a redelegation of authority to the Undersecretary, but a direct. And your opposing counsel is making the point that they are different things. And then you go to 3.100, we have delegations of authority, and there are two of them. One is to the Undersecretary for Benefits, and one is to the Director of Comp and Pen, and there's no redelegation of authority.
As stated, as argued earlier.
So what does Congress mean when it says the Secretary can authorize a redelegation of authority?
I believe it's from the Secretary to the Undersecretary for Benefits.
And then doesn't he have to authorize the Undersecretary to redelegate that authority?
And I think at this, I think the 3.100 is that basically redelegation of authority, because it says that the Undersecretary of Benefits can decide basically benefits for claims, as well as, and then the second portion, and to supervisory or adjudicative personnel within the jurisdiction of the VBA designated by the Undersecretary to make findings. So those supervisory and adjudicative personnel within the VBA is basically, as long as it's designated by the Undersecretary, can make decisions on benefits claims.
So the delegated to the Undersecretary is also delegated to supervisory or adjudicative personnel that are designated by the Undersecretary.
By the other, yes, Your Honor. It's basically a two-part function in terms of 3.100.
Does your argument, the counsel, then make this delegation of authority directive inapplicable to this case?
In our particular case, Your Honor, there is no VA memorandum, but as far as that directive goes, it does state that if it's within, if it is a delegation within the CFRs, and in this case, we believe the CMP director's duty to do 311 cases is within 38 CFR 3.100, it's considered law. And there's other different delegations that the Undersecretary of Benefits does. As noted above, it's for different things to the employment agencies to decide FCS factors, different insurance. Those are the different types of delegations where there's a specific memorandum.
Actually, isn't your position that 3.100 itself is a delegation of authority directly from the Secretary to those people designated, to those supervisory or adjudicative personnel designated by VBA? And that's not even a redelegation. It's a direct delegation of authority to those designated, and the M21 is a designation, not necessarily a delegation.
Yes, Your Honor, it's a designation of that.
Is there any regulatory history on that section that supports your position?
The 3.100.
Yes.
Just Your Honor, I've looked through the Federal Register, and it's basically that it's been basically given for the Chief Benefits Director. It's basically to allow the people under him, the people within his organization, to do insurance claims, do all the different claims and benefits adjudicated by the Veterans Administration. And it's basically been just that delegation of authority to what is now the Undersecretary for Benefits.
So your answer is yes or no?
I'm sorry.
That there is regulatory history that supports your position?
Yes,
or there is not?
And I believe the different federal registers, the rest of, has followed the position that we've stated before.
What specific regulatory history? Can you point me to the Federal Register for support?
Your Honor, the one I pulled out with 37 FR 10442, May 23, 1972, and it's a similar language regarding the delegation of authority to the Chief Benefits Director.
In 3.100, similar language to 3.100, you're
saying?
Yes,
Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
And with that, Your Honor, the Secretary requests that the court affirm the board decision on appeal.
Does the Director of Comp and Hen, when he acts in these types of cases, render any kind of a medical opinion?
No, Your Honor. Our position is that the CNC Director's opinion is not medical in nature. What it is that the CNP director, on behalf of the Undersecretary for Benefits, must consider the factors under 38 CFR 3.11E, which include things like the radiation dose measurements, appellant's gender and family history, the time lapse between exposure and onset of disease, and the extent to which the exposure to other than radiation, other carcinogenic, may have contributed to the development of the disease.
So you wouldn't weigh the director of CNP's determination against a physician's.
No, Your Honor. In this case, what the process is, the CNP director looks at the case, decides whether or not he needs an outside consultation, a medical consultation. In this case, he did, from Dr. Dayton. Dr. Dayton provided his opinion. He reviewed that opinion and then considered factors in 3.311E, such as the fact that appellant had had his COPD and pulmonary fibrosis 40 years after exposure, that he had smoked for 29 years after radiation exposure, and those kinds of factors that were in the CNP director's opinion.
Would it be inappropriate then for the board to weigh the director of CNP's determination against the physician for the appellant?
Your Honor, I think it's basically after the radiation process. If it's a radiation case, after those processes have been completed, there is a section where they look at it as a whole. So they look at the CNP director's opinion, any private medical opinion, as well as if the CNP director got an opinion from the chief public environmental health hazard officer.
But if you had the chief public health environmental and hazards officer's opinion, you wouldn't weigh the CNP director's opinion with that against the private physician, would you?
Your Honor, we believe that it is basically still considered evidence because under 3.311, I believe E.
I'm talking about the medical question now.
The medical question, Your Honor, it is part of as far as causation. We do acknowledge the CNP director is not a medical physician, but neither is the Undersecretary for Benefits. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. You have 10 minutes. You may begin. Why isn't your opposing counsel correct in that 3.100 talks about authority being delegated to both the undersecretary and to supervisory or adjudicated personnel as designated by the undersecretary to make findings and decisions, such that the undersecretary could designate people and that authority to do anything the secretary gave is also to that person?
Unfettered delegations and redelegations.
It's not a delegation, though. It's a designation.
Excuse me, Your Honor.
Well, I guess it's an unfettered designation by the secretary.
Yes, Your Honor.
To whoever it is they delegate. But isn't that then governed by these other procedures, like for the fact that it's in a published, judicially recognizable, I assume, M21?
Well, the M21, M1, MR, Your Honor, is, as opposing counsel noted, prepared and issued by the Undersecretary for Benefits. However, if he lacked the authority to delegate what he purports to delegate therein...
But he can designate people.
He cannot designate them to take tasks that are inconsistent with regulations. Policy manuals cannot trump regulations that have the effect of law. The Secretary's directives specifically states the 1999 directive on delegations in the section 1 on purpose notes that, we'll strike that, in Appendix A2,
Which is this now? What are you looking at?
The 1999 VA directive, Appendix A, Section 2.
Not so fast. Appendix A.
It says page A-2 on the bottom left. The 1999 VA directive.
Got it. Okay, where?
At the very first paragraph under methods for delegating authority, it specifically states the delegations contained in the CFR are specific to VA organizations and positions and have the effect of law.
No, I'm with you on that. So follow me, though. This is what I want to understand. 3.100 is a specific delegation of authority from the secretary. You agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor.
To the undersecretary. You agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Or supervisory or adjudicatory personnel within BBA. Do you agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So the delegation of authority is already in 3.100, and it's not the undersecretary delegating any authority. It's then the undersecretary designating.
Yes.
And so this delegation of authority seems inapposite to what we're talking about, doesn't it?
Well, the well-traveled canon of construction that the specific trumps the general would foreclose an interpretation of 3.100A as trumping the specific identification of the undersecretary in Section 3.311. In fact, Section 3.100 was on the books when Section 3.311 was promulgated. So against that backdrop, presumably if the secretary had wanted anyone within the Veterans Benefits Administration to be able to perform the task that he specifically assigned to the undersecretary, he would have either said nothing and not identified a specific person, or he would have made clear just adjudicative personnel, if you will, or individuals assigned, designated by the undersecretary, rather than specifically identifying the undersecretary. However, he did not choose to do that. He said the undersecretary for benefits. He entitled subsection C, review by the undersecretary for benefits. Four places in 3.311, it says the undersecretary for benefits shall. So those are pretty specific provisions. 3.100A, while it does do what Your Honor has suggested, does not specifically address the radiation claims adjudication process. So vis-a-vis 3.311, it is a general provision, and it would be contrary to the canon of construction to interpret that to trump the specific identification of the undersecretary in 3.311.
In fact, everything in 3.311 is being done by someone in VBA, right? Except where the secretary specifically refers to the undersecretary himself.
I'm sorry, in 3.311?
3.311 is a special set of procedures for claims based on exposure to ionizing radiation. And all those procedures are done by anybody the VBA undersecretary designates. Except where the secretary said these specific things are done by the undersecretary himself.
That's correct.
That's your position.
And as I noted during my principal argument, 3.311F makes expressly clear that the adjudication is to be done through the typical adjudicatory process. So in that regard, it is unlikely that had the secretary intended the specific role he carved out for the undersecretary to have been available to anyone in VBA under 3.100, he would not have concomitantly included section 3.311F, where he says that essentially, well, these claims are going to be adjudicated through the usual procedures.
So just to get it, the secretary says under 3.100, undersecretary, you can do anything you want within your zone of responsibility, and you can designate all these people who can do everything. And then the more specific regulation comes in for these specific claims, and the secretary now says, except here, you've got to do it.
Yes, Your Honor. And that's fully within his discretion. He could have written this regulation any other way. And our position is not that he could not have assigned this responsibility to anyone in VBA. Our position is the fact that he chose not to has force of law.
Again, Mr. Wiedemeyer, that's an interesting argument. I don't see exclusive language in this regulation, however. I mean, as you say, the secretary could have said in Section 3.311 review by the undersecretary for benefits only, or exclusively, or shall be made only in these kinds of cases. That exclusive language does not exist here. I think you have a fair argument, but I'm just making a point that it certainly does not exclude the undersecretary from designating, or perhaps, well, certainly designating, it seems to me.
Are the undersecretaries political appointees?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is the director CMP?
To my knowledge, no, Your Honor. The undersecretary for benefits is a statutory provision subject to nomination by the president and confirmation by the Senate. And in that regard, although this is mostly speculation, but Congress made clear in its preparatory findings to Public Law 98-542 that it wanted consistency in the adjudication of radiation-based claims. In subsection 12, Congress noted the complexity of these claims, and then in Section 5A, it noted that that regulations were to be issued to promote the consistency of these proceedings in both processing and adjudication. That comports with having one individual, with his selection of one individual, the undersecretary, to perform this review as part of the process. If the CMP director and a regional office director or a veteran service center manager or a senior rating specialist or anyone that the undersecretary may willy-nilly ask to do this, there would be no consistency. And
but
that's clearly what Congress
wants. But isn't the CMP director precisely the person you would pick to give consistency to this process rather than some political appointee who, with due deference to all political appointees, probably comes to the job with little or no background in benefits administration under VA regulations?
That could be the case, Your Honor. I would respectfully respond that Congress perhaps wanted there to be accountability. An individual...
You mean the secretary?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
This person's appointed by the secretary, right? In other words, 3 points.
No, I'm referring to the undersecretary.
But he's appointed by the secretary, not by...
No, Your Honor. The undersecretary is nominated by the president.
Not to do these particular duties, though. These duties are designated by the secretary. Congress didn't...
Oh, that's correct.
Okay. So it's the secretary you've got to talk about giving these duties to the undersecretary.
Well, in responding to Judge Mormon's question, vis-a-vis the experienced person, individual... the non-political employee.
Just to get my point, that's why Congress wants that person to be political. I understand that per. Why does the secretary want the undersecretary to do it, though?
The undersecretary is, by statute, the head of the Veterans Benefits Administration. He's the top of the line in that chain of command if you don't go beyond the Veterans Benefits Administration. Who else, how better to ensure consistency in decision-making than vesting the determination on preparing these, vesting the authority to make these advisory opinions to the top of the chain of command.
We have time out, but I'll add more. And I have one question I want to add anyway. Do you want to ask first?
Sure.
All right, we'll add 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Wiedemeyer, do you have any idea how many cases we're talking about on an annual basis?
That are decided by radiation or that are decided by the opinion is prepared by the comp?
These kinds of cases, ionized radiation cases.
I honestly do not, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm just curious. Does it make sense that the thousands of cases generally, and now I can't speak to the specific numbers for this type of case, but does it make sense that that the Secretary might limit the designation authority to one position for dealing with the myriad numbers of cases that the department gets?
With respectfully, Your Honor, I don't believe that the Secretary's administrative preferences can trump regulation. The Secretary is free to amend Section 3.311 or put a new delegation of authority in Part 2 or anywhere else in the CFR if he believes that these claims are creating such a backlog that it would be difficult for one individual to prepare the number of opinions that are necessary. But you know, administrative efficiency cannot trump regulations that have the force of law.
Well, and in fairness, it seems like it's either the undersecretary or it's the director, so it's one person anyway. Why don't we have a de facto delegation here? We've got an M21. We've got a history where this has been processed this way. It's cited as being processed this way in our cases. Wouldn't it be very difficult for this court to ignore that fact and the even judicial notice that the secretary is cognizant and aware of this, and since he has full authority to designate anywhere he wants to, and we've got 3-100 that raises this? I mean, I think your point's been well taken, but there's a de facto delegation, isn't there?
Respectfully, no, Your Honor. The VA directive that I submitted on Tuesday spells out the secretary's view on how delegations are to be made. There are two ways, either promulgating a regulation.
Well, what do you say about the, I got that. What do you say about the M21? I mean, it's a very important document. There might be a debate as whether or not it carries the force of law, but it's still an important document. Certainly the secretary is aware of it, and certainly it says, unless you're going to point to me something different, that the director processes these. Does it not? I mean, if you can point to me something different, I'm open.
No, the manual does specifically.
Okay, so why isn't that a de facto?
In a field of law that is supposed to be non-adversarial and pro-claimant, there should not be hidden law.
We'll add another minute. The M21 is not hidden.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, compared to the U.S.
No, I'll be respectful. Respectfully, it would take a lawyer to go through this, follow these around, and present it. I think the average person looking at this with the M21 there is going to say that CNP director is doing it. And so I go back to, why isn't it a de facto?
A veteran can go to a public library and read the CFR. I doubt that he can go to a public library and find the manual M21-1MR to know that the person that the regulation identifies as making the potentially dispositive determination in his case is really somebody that the secretary has determined through some...
So do you think the secretary designated the undersecretary for the benefit of the veteran?
I think the secretary designated the undersecretary alone to make this determination to further Congress's intent that there be consistency in the adjudication of radiation claims as opposed to different determinations made by different officials potentially all across the country in regional offices.
All right, thank you. Do you have any further questions? And I will give the secretary a minute if they want.
Yeah, let me just ask something.
All right, let's add 2 minutes.
Practical standpoint here. Let's take for a second your argument, your technical argument, off the table and concede that the secretary did not comply, if applicable, with the delegations of authority directive. In practical terms, if an ionizing radiation case comes to the director of CNP, gets booted over to VHA, gets a medical opinion with regard to dose qualifications from VHA, it goes back to the director of CNP, do you want to assert that the undersecretary for benefits is going to make an independent decision that's not based on what the CNP director is telling him?
Well, if the undersecretary were exercising his duty, the CNP wouldn't be doing anything based on anything the CNP director said, because he would not have referred it to the CNP director in the first place. He would have made his own independent determination, as the regulation requires. There'd be no deference involved if he followed his responsibility under 3.311, because...
That's helpful. So your position is that if it's an ionizing radiation case, it has to go to the undersecretary for benefits, period, dot.
Unless the secretary chooses to delegate or permit the undersecretary to redelegate through a regulation, yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you very
much.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
I will, in fairness, if you have something you really, really think is really important, I think the issues are pretty well laid out. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome down to Greek Council.